Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us co-hosting, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Tuesday, August the 4th, 2015. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. And I usually say, welcome, Michael, but he is in a van on the road. He said he would be with us, but that it was too noisy for him to talk. So let me tell you what this show's about. Mind Shifters Radio, it's about shifting your mind. And how do you do that? How do you get back to being who you were designed to be? And we always ask everybody to describe a newborn, and they always come back with wonderful, miracle, awesome, precious, pure, open, sweet, innocent, and we always say that's who you are. You may have forgotten it, but that's still who you are. That's who we were each designed to be. We ask a second question, and it's how many have ever done something that you regret, and that list comes back with, and then we say, what emotion were you feeling that motivated you to do whatever it was that you now regret having done? And that list comes back as anger, fear, shame, guilt, pain. And we say, you know, notice the two lists are not the same. But how many people lived in the second list of grief and pain and anger and fear more than they do what they were designed to be? And so when those energies are in our system and they don't belong there, they actually create our disease, physical, mental, and emotional. And so this work is about getting back to being who we're designed to be. And how do you do that? It's Aramaic forgiveness. And that's not letting another person off the hook for what they bring up for you, but it's going inside and removing what doesn't belong in your system so you can get back to your original created being. And so that's what this show's about. And we also offer tools on relationship and creating consciously and stress and codependency, a whole range of tools. And you can go to our website, which is www.whyagain.org. And there's lots of information out there. If you click on the bullseye in the middle of the page or up in the top left corner where it says start here, they both take you to the same place. And it will take you to where there's all the worksheets, there's explanations, there's MP3s of radio shows where we've actually walked someone through doing the forgiveness worksheet, and just lots and lots of tools, audios, videos, and you can just spend lots of time out there. And then we have this show Monday through Friday to support you. If you have any questions or you have any comments, then that's what we're here for, to offer support for you to continue doing your work. So at this time, I would like to welcome Dr. Tim. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And
awesome.
So, is the intensive over?
No, it is not. Our next class is at 1:30, so Michael had to run into town and said that he would be back before class, so we have an hour and a half before the next class.
Oh, all right.
So he had to get that errand done and take off. No, we finish up this coming Saturday, And it's been a small group, but it's been super powerful. Yesterday, we just breathed. And so we, it's kind of like, you know, law of living is secondary, it seems like, in this, because everybody's just going into such process. And I don't believe I've ever been in a law of living intensive processing, so it's, which is a good thing. And it's a good thing that it's a small group, or we probably wouldn't get through it. But we're probably, let's see, we're on lesson four, so we have four more to go. Today's Tuesday, so we'll do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday's closure. So everybody's gonna, we'll have to pull in the reins a little bit if we're gonna get through the actual class itself. So.
I'm certain that it's all working out beautifully and that everybody there is getting what they need, because that's what happens. I had a wonderful testimonial that reminds me of time at Heartland, and the testimonial was from somebody who'd started to do work with me at a Mind Shifters group 9 years ago or so, maybe 10. I forget how long we've been doing the Mind Shifters, but way back when, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 locations ago, and she was in to see me today, and she just, with tears in her eyes, tears of gratitude, talked about how when she stumbled into that group, she had never in her life, probably 30 at the time, she'd never in her life been in a place that was so loving and accepting. And she could feel, and she named a couple of the people that she remembers from that early group experience, and how people were just doing their own work, and they were focused on themselves, and they were accepting of everyone and every question and every process. And she just had never encountered anything like that in her life. And she attributes the magical combination of that loving, accepting atmosphere and the power of those tools with how she was able to transform her life. It was, and it just reminds me of the space at Heartland, because, as you know, Michael has talked about, and you've talked about on the show, that it's not all just rose petals and fairy dust. A lot of people have very strong negative emotions that get triggered, and they're processing through them when they're at Heartland. However, the key in that phrase is they're processing through it, meaning they or the people around them are holding the space of love when that upsetting material comes up. And that space of love, that actual energy of the Creator that we're made of and that flows through us, that's the thing that does the healing. And all of these tools, all of the worksheets, all of the journaling tools have as only one goal, and that is to help us bring that space of love to conscious awareness. At the same time, something unlike love, we allow that stuff that's unlike love to surface in our awareness. And that's all we have to do. We just have to be there and hold the space. It's the energy of creation. It's the energy of love that does the healing. I don't heal myself. I don't heal another. My role in the healing process is that of willingness. My role in the healing process is to lessen the grip of my resistance and fear and allow what's less than love in me to surface while I or those around me are holding the space of love. And then I get reconnected to my true nature, which is that energy of creation, and I get to drop huge bags of garbage, probably that have been in my bloodline for generations. And so I have a lot of gratitude resonated this morning, in line with that testimonial that was given and in line with my loving memories of my times at Heartland. So
awesome. Thank you for sharing that. The property, we were actually talking about that a little bit yesterday, is how there's, like, the ground is just full of crystals. It's just amazing. So it's definitely built on a bed of energy, as well as the energy that people bring to it. And I think one of the first things everybody says is, you know, they can feel that it's a safe space. And there has been a lot of different things come up this week, and or the last 20 days. And it seems like a theme has been post-traumatic stress, and not just from war, but that everybody has had some kind of a trauma, whether it's abuse or, you know, whether it's mental, physical, emotional, or whether they've been in the war, but that almost everybody here has at some point had this great trauma that has left them with this post-traumatic stress and working through that. So there has been kind of a common theme. Also, love of truth and use of will have been two biggies. And it's always kind of neat how the group that does come together seems to have so much in common, and which is great. Then when we're working with one person, it resonates everybody else that's got that as a challenge, and everybody just holds the space and we work through it. And there's been some high energy and some, you know, we've seen some anger come up and some sadness come up, and it's just been really cool. And like I said yesterday, everybody was in that space, we just breathed. And so we go back to class at 1:30 and get back to the books on it. But it is definitely a really cool space. And it looks like, you know, we're not positive, it's not been confirmed yet, but it looks like there's several people who may land here for the winter and hold the space and do some repair work on the buildings and start doing more intense support group from here, which is good to keep that going from this actual space. I mean, there's, like, Magda and them are doing a support group at their house, and that's phenomenal, and I think that's been going very well. And it'd just be good to have the work also here on the property, even when we're gone, to have the work going on and people getting together and doing worksheets. So I know Jim's glad. If he's on the switchboard, he might want to pop in. This last winter, he was buying stuff a big part of the winter here, and so I know he's glad that there's possibly going to be a bunch of people popping in and assisting and getting the energy moving during the winter time. So we had some major issues with plumbing, so weren't able to use the Heart Center this year. It's a good thing we had a small group. We used the Eternal Support building that's across the street from the house here, and have been able to use the living room and kitchen. But it's definitely different not being able to have the Heart Center. So there's definitely some work that needs to be done in preparation for a bigger group for next year. So that's what's on the plate here. And Michael and I are still looking at settling somewhere for several months during the winter and finishing his writing. And I've started a book, so hopefully I can finish it as well. But it's just got to be downtime from that. It takes different energy than it does when you're touring and doing workshops every evening. So hopefully we'll get that done this winter too. And we can't do it from here. Some people say, well, why don't you just stay home and do it? If we were here, Michael would be involved in everything going on, and probably me too, and there wouldn't get any writing done. So, but anyway. Let's see, you've got a support group tonight, right, Dr. Tim?
We do. We do, and people frequently ask me, so what are you going to watch tonight? And years back, it was pretty simple. I had all 15 DVDs, and I had them in my DVD case, and I would just play them in order. And as the group has evolved over the years, the past few years, I've been doing more of inserting different things into the mix in the middle of Michael's list of 15 DVD titles. And so occasionally we'll play something from Dale Allen Hoffman, his DVD, The Word, or one of his YouTube talks that's, you know, close to an hour long that stimulate brain cells, or we've done Yayam, the Way of Masteries. Yayam has a DVD on a different set of interpretations of the Aramaic Beatitudes. And so, you know, every once in a while, I'll do two or three Michael Rice DVDs, and then I'll take a week or two and put another very relevant, very powerful audio or DVD segment in there. And last night I got another 2 hours of Michael and Dale. So I don't know what's going to happen tonight. We might do the next, because we did Laws of Living the second half last week, and so now I think the Circle of Life and How to Play It is the next one that's up in rotation. But we also have access to Dr. Michael Rice. And Dr. Michael Rice, when he was doing, what was the other thing that he sent me? That
either the Aramaicisms, or we also videoed the What is the World? Did you get that one?
Okay, so he hasn't sent me the What is the World, but he sent me the first two, and now the second 2 hours of the Aramaicism.
Aramaicisms.
So, you know, we will do that tonight. And I was moved to such gratitude last Friday that I put out a blog post about, you know, the deep level of work that's being done by people in these groups over the past couple months. It's just really resonated deep gratitude in me. And so I wrote a blog post about it, and it remains one of the highlights of my week, and now it's two of the highlights in my week, because I restructured my practice so that I could have a group here on Thursday nights as well. And the power and the depth of the intelligence and love and respect and the work that's done in those groups is beyond words. So this is just, again, a recommendation for people. If you want to know more about it, there were two powerful worksheets that were done on this radio show last week. There are 15 or 16 in the audio files that you can download for free. And you can get a hint at the process by listening to those shows. But to really fully experience it, either go to a support group or start your own. And what happens when two or more people are gathered doing this work is absolutely lovely. Absolutely lovely. And then, of course, that's why we're here. We're here 5 days a week, or the better part of 5 days a week, to talk about, teach, and support people in doing this very same work. So 646-200-4169. Ask a question. It really, really makes things click at a deeper level. And I know we had some people with their hands up yesterday that we didn't get time to click through. So now is the time.
Absolutely. And someone in the chat room said, what was it, 2% of people actually think? People think they're thinking. It's just resonance.
Yeah, that was a lovely question. And, of course, Erica called yesterday and asked about that. And then she said that even though she's heard the DVD a number of different times, it never really clicked in for her that Michael was saying most people don't think. And she asked for clarification on that. And Michael's point on that is that my human brain, this physical device, is a lot like a hard drive, a computer hard drive. And all it can do is spit back what's been programmed into it. And I wouldn't begin to talk about how my hard drive is thinking unless I'm using it as a euphemism before, I know it's running through its automatic process because I told it to bring up a certain file. However, that's all my physical brain can do, is call up the material that's been stored in it. And so when most people think, or most people believe that they are thinking, all they're doing is responding because something's been triggered in their mind. And our goal has to be to learn about and then begin to develop and strengthen spiritual faculties of will, which go beyond just playing back the information that's been downloaded into our brain whenever it gets triggered by internal random thoughts or external experiences. And there are different shows where Michael has talked about this, but he ran through it rather quickly again yesterday, that there are spiritual faculties of will that allow us to do things relative to goals, and we can frame a goal, and we can set a goal, we can maintain that goal and awareness of that goal, and we can cancel a goal, and we can achieve a goal. Well, most people are never even taught about anything other than set and achieve your goals. And if all we're ever taught as human beings is to set and achieve our goals, we end up like the hamster on the wheel. Because we don't realize that every time I set a goal, even if I'm not consciously aware of setting it, once a goal's been set in my mind, it continues to run, consciously or unconsciously, until one of two things happens. It's either achieved, or it's consciously canceled. So if I've never been taught about the spiritual faculty of will that allows me to cancel a goal, and if I don't actively pursue that, I end up living a life that's driven by unconscious goals that may have been set 2, 3, or 5, or 6 decades ago. And when they get triggered in my mind, since they're unconscious, the strongest resonant energy in my system that I'm not aware of will drive my behavior in the moment. And people say, well, what do you mean by that? And the example I give is, let's say that I'm at I've reached a certain level in life, and people think I'm a good enough business person, and so they put me on a board of directors for a community college. And I've been on the board for 6 or 8 years, and I know the other people, and I like and respect them, and one of our members is moving away, so he can't or she can't be on the board anymore. So I show up for one meeting, and there are several potential candidates to replace the outgoing board member. And one of them, I just take a real strong liking to. And after the meeting, I have several of the old-time board members, good friends of mine that I trust and respect, and they pull me aside and they say, hey, Tim, what's with you and that Larry guy? And I said, oh, yeah, Larry, isn't he great? He'd be a great fit on the team. And they all say, Tim, we've never had a worse candidate for this board. And you sucked up to him like he was, the president of Microsoft. And we can't figure out why you would even spend the second sentence on this guy. And oh no, I'm triggered to defend him. What's going on there? These are people that I know and trust and respect. There are 4 of them. They pulled me aside to try and figure out what just went haywire in Tim. What's likely to have happened is something about this guy, Larry, who just is not a very good fit for the board, triggered an old goal in me. What would that be? Well, let's say Larry has a haircut like, or a jaw set like, or a tone of voice, or the way he carries himself that's very similar to an uncle I had. He was an older uncle, so he was more like a father figure to me, or a big brother figure to me. And I was always after that uncle's approval. And I never quite got him to align with me, to approve of me. And maybe I only spent, 4 or 5 years of my life, maybe from age 8 to 13, with that uncle in my life. And then I moved away or he moved away. But that goal was never achieved. I never got Uncle Larry, we'll call him just for the sake of reference, to approve of me in the way I craved. And so I didn't know anything about canceling goals, and here's that goal running in my life. I'm 61 years old. I'm at a board meeting. Somebody comes in, triggers that same energy vibration. And my goal to win approval from the new Larry in a very inappropriate setting in life takes over my behavior, takes over the literal perceiving device in my mind, and creates a set of perceptions for me that completely override my normal logic, my good judgment, and go directly against the good judgment of these four other board members that I trust and respect. Those kinds of things happen daily in our lives. And they happen even more to those of us who aren't aware that one of the spiritual faculties of will is the ability to cancel a goal. And unless I achieve the goal or consciously cancel it, it's still running in my mind. It's consuming my resources. It's draining my energy. And it's always looking for a way to get fulfilled. So I'll take a breath, see if this has sparked any questions or comments in anybody, chat room or otherwise.
That's awesome. Nobody has their hand up right now, but it did resonate one thing for me, and that was yesterday when we were sharing, we always breathe, half the group, and then we process and share, and then the other half breathe. And in the processing time, we were talking about inspired and driven and controlled life, and there was some question about, well, what's the difference, if you're inspired, isn't that driving you, or whatever. And so I actually looked up the definitions, and in the word driven says to be operated, moved, controlled by a specified person or source has power. Then inspired says an extraordinary quality as if arising from some external creative impulse is breathed in. And it was like, there is such a difference in those two definitions. And so, we talked about that yesterday. You're either controlled from without, you're driven from within, or you are inspired being. And one of those is what runs your behaviors. And we all want to be inspired. So 646-200-4169. And Dr. Tim's right. There were a couple people had their hands up yesterday, and we didn't get to you. So we've got 30 minutes left of the show. Press 1. It puts you in queue. Got plenty of time to get whatever it is that you want to tell us and questions you want to ask and for us to answer it. If you wait till the last minute, we can't get to you. So press 1.
Well, please interrupt me if somebody calls in.
Okay.
Sometimes the process is so new that it really stirs people up because it's bringing new brain cells, and sometimes it stirs up frustration and anger. I had somebody in my office earlier today, and she's been working with me for quite a while, and so she's learned to tune in to her physical and emotional response during our conversations. And I made a statement, and she just bristled. And she said, "Oh my God, keep talking. You just hit something." So as you're listening to the show, and if somebody talks about, you know what, there's a part of how your mind and body works that you may never have heard about. Here's a spiritual faculty called will, and there's this function of will in regard to goals that you may never have heard about, and it may be one of the most important things in your life. Well, if you're 30 years old and you're hearing that, it's probably quite a shock to your system. I once stood up to give a talk to somebody, a room full of people, it was about 45 people, in a motivational speakers group. And I said, so let's talk about goals. And people literally cheered, because this is a room full of people who've been talked to about goals, motivational speakers, salesmen, saleswomen who've been taught about setting and achieving goals and writing down your year's goals and writing down your five-year goals, 10-year goals, your month goals, your week goals, your five-minute goals. Write them down. And they cheered when I said, let's talk about goals. And then I said, and let's take everything that you're cheering about right now, everything you've ever heard about goals, and put that on the bookshelf where you can get back to it later if you need it. But now let's talk about it completely differently than anything you've ever heard about goals. There were actually people groaning. People were resistant at the idea of taking everything they've learned about goals and setting it aside temporarily. And I can understand why, because this is a room full of relatively successful people, well-dressed, at a nice restaurant, having a nice meal, most of them individual business owners. There's a part of us that gets so identified with what we believe we know that it wants to resist learning something new because it feels threatened. So if you're listening and you notice any kind of resistance come up in you, the first thing to do is use your breath to soften it. And then every tool in the book that Dr. Michael Rice and Jeannie promote at the website, www.whyagain.org, is designed to help you uncover the hidden part of your mind that is in resistance to learning something new, which might take your life to a better level of love, creativity, joy, and aliveness. And if you stop and think about it, why would anybody resist being taken to a higher level of love, creativity, joy, and aliveness? There's something backwards about that. And yet, every time someone comes along and talks about something that goes against what I believe, I feel the tension in me. I feel myself judging. I feel myself building my rebuttal that's going to undercut what they're saying. And unless I can identify that early warning energy sign in me and soften and breathe into that and move into a state of allowance and acceptance, with the position that says, you know what? What I already think I know is probably only partially true, and in some ways perhaps even completely false. And then I sit back and listen to whatever and whoever is talking. Now I've opened a space where I have the potential to learn something new. And this isn't about someone else being right and me being wrong, or me being right and them being wrong. They might be talking about something that goes directly against the laws of life, of the universal laws of truth. And yet, if I soften and listen, I may learn something that gets resonated in me at a different level, and it might help me understand at a deeper level one of the truths I've already observed. And it's even possible that it might help me realize that what I thought I knew was wrong. And I have to be able to put myself in that receptive space. I have to be able to put myself in that allowing space. It's called the path of least resistance by some. It's called the path of most allowance by some. And I can tell when I'm in it, comfort and ease in my breath and my physical state. And I can tell when I'm not in it because of the tension, the resistance, the judging nature of my mental workings, etc. So, have we stirred anything up for anybody, Jeannie?
Well, it actually, there again, one of the things, we do the personal code evaluation, which shows us areas that we have blockage. And under the love for truth challenge, there's a question that always seems to stand out for me, whether it's one of my challenges or not. And that is the question, what judgment am I protecting? And that's kind of what you were just talking about. It's, that we oftentimes can't see truth because we're holding a judgment, we're protecting, we have a judgment that, what I believe or what I think I already know is the truth, and we want to protect that, that it's got to be the truth, and so I'm going to protect it. And we don't let any other information in, so we can't even question, is it right or not? And to be able, and I say we, because, it's been a challenge. It's not one of my challenges this time around, but it has been in the past. And so being able to say, set my judgment of what I believe is true aside, even if it's just temporarily, to bring in some more information and then question, could this be right, or, could I be wrong, and look at it. And, if it doesn't fit the new information, throw it away and pick your old judgment back up. But to be able to set it aside long enough even to be able to look at something new is sometimes a challenge in itself. It's like, it's that question, what judgment am I protecting? And to look at, what is it that I have fear around even questioning? And why is there fear around that? And
the key there is to realize that the challenge is always an internal challenge.
Yes.
It's always an internal challenge. There is nothing that can ever be taken from me of any value, and nothing of any value that can be added to me at any point in time. And so every time I have a belief that I'm being challenged, an inside job, and it's all false.
Right. We did have a hand just now go up, so we have stirred something. Let's see who we've got. It's area code 224. Who do we have, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Tim. This is Mary from Chicago.
Hello, Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Well, you guys just stirred up some good stuff for me, talking about what judgment am I protecting. And I had a real good incident yesterday. I've been working on that with a lot of things, but a little bit in not opposition to what you're saying, but like judgments against myself that are negative. And for example, yesterday I had an interaction with my ex-husband, which it has been difficult because I'm actually putting some legal action against him for a long story, but a violation of our divorce agreement. And in talking to him, in the patterns that were in my head, I immediately started blaming myself and feeling guilty for doing something that was something I had to do. So it's kind of amazing to me that I'm looking at protecting him and hurting myself. I can take it to that extreme of protecting my judgments.
Well, it might even be you might want to look at, how you've looked at yourself and that, well, I'm always wrong, or I can't deserve, I don't deserve this, even though, part of me feels like, I do deserve it. There's another part of me deep inside that says, oh, but you can't ever have it. It's not going to happen for you, or you're wrong about this. And so a lot of those things that we hold on to that we believe about ourselves and that keeps us blinded to the truth about the whole situation. And, the truth is, we can hold someone accountable from a loving space. If you do it from fear or hostility, you'll do something you regret in it. But if you can hold to your being, then holding another person accountable for their behavior that is off target is totally appropriate.
Right, right. Yeah, and I've done. And so I've waited a long time to do this, and getting to that place, and I've gone through all of that. But I was just kind of amazed at where my mind went.
So what have you done? What have you done to work with that?
Well, this week, I was doing some. I did several worksheets. I did a mind shifter on, on the whole topic because I was very upset about it all week. And I, yeah, I mean, I just doing my usual stuff, a little bit of tapping, and but yeah, it's sometimes it's even I get into it, and it's even hard to breathe. It's just, you know, it's something I've worked with for so long. It's just still amazing to me that I can get to another level and a deeper level of it, and it's the same thing.
Well, and it sounds like if it's hard for you to breathe, it sounds like that what you're bumping into is a set of beliefs that are focused at the survival level.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so one good question for you to explore, either with worksheets or with a mind shifter, is for whom in my life when I was younger was it important that I always be wrong?
Yeah. Good one. Oh, yeah.
And if that turned out to be a power person, a parent, or a grandparent, and if this began in my life when I was young enough, then it would be logical for me to form the conclusion that if I don't live up to this belief that I need to be wrong in order for them to be okay, if they're not okay, I don't survive.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter how monstrous I might label their behavior or how negative I might label it, if the people that I rely on for food, clothing, and shelter when I'm young, if they aren't alive, if they don't survive, I don't survive.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the clues to use in that when you say, sometimes when this comes up and I start looking at it, it's hard for me to breathe. That indicates it's probably a survival level fear. It probably goes pretty deep. And your willingness is going to be key. The willingness to keep your breath moving,
mm-hmm.
the willingness to do more of whatever the mind shifter was that you did already this week. Or you might try a new one that says, it's safe and healing for me and my relationships and all my relations for me to be strong, for me to trust my judgment, and for me to be lovingly assertive.
Well, lovingly assertive. That's interesting. Okay. Okay, I like that one. I won't like it when I'm doing it, but I'll like it now. Okay, that's great. Now I'll work on that one.
And just watch the breath, because when the breath tightens up, it's, you know, it's one thing to catch myself breathing in a shallow pattern or a rapid pattern. It's another thing to say it's hard to breathe. When people say that, we know they're tapping into a survival level issue.
Great. Okay. Oh boy. I guess the vitality meter went up and here we go.
Here you go.
Here you go. All right. Well, I might have Jeannie, I'm in Tim's group tonight, so I might have some good work to do. It's such a wonderful group. I don't know. It has done so much for me. It's just amazing. And it just
That's
seems
awesome.
To get better and better. Mhm. All right, thanks. I'll listen for a while and get started on this.
All right.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
It's kind of, you know, how we link those file folders. I'll talk for just a minute. And if you've got a question, please press 1. The show is definitely more alive when we have your comments and questions in it. But one of the things that I thought about as Mary was talking there and you were talking to her and giving her guidance when we did mind shifters yesterday, before we did the breathing, my mind shifter was, I love survive when someone tells me no. And I was actually with one of the participants in the laundromat. And so we were doing mind shifters in the laundromat in between getting clothes out of dryers and stuff. And this is probably one of the quickest ones that got to an aha moment in it. And it feels like it fits with what we were just talking about with Mary and linking files. My first memory was as a small child and being told no, and the sadness and the feeling of not being loved enough to get a yes. And so I linked somewhere along the way that a yes was love. And so then my aha came right behind that, and it's like, so I tell everyone yes to prove that I so-called, quote-unquote, love them. People have, all my life have framed goals for me, and I set them because I couldn't tell them no, because I have to say yes to show them that I love them, even though some of the things I maybe were saying yes to was against what I really wanted to do. And or maybe, you know, now that I've been in this work, maybe even going against my purpose. And so looking at that, and I said, you know, I'm just really glad that I had enough fear, and it was fear, it wasn't wisdom, to say no in the sexual arena. But then there have been so many times in my life when I've not said no because I wanted to prove that, you know, I was worthy of this person's approval or whatever. And then when I got to the bottom of it, I realized, you know, I've been doing work. One of my big challenges every time I do the personal code evaluation is love of self. And, you know, the same thing that Mary, you know, we were kind of saying, you know, maybe you feel like, you know, you're not worthy of it and you deserve to be on the bottom end of it and those kind of things. And some of that's been my issue. So what I was offering to you, Mary, is probably my own projection. But what I got to the bottom of it was that as I have learned to take care of my own self and the love of self increase, then I've realized that it is often healthy for me to say no, and that I am going to take care of myself and stay on my purpose and work towards saying no more often when it feels like that's the appropriate thing to do. And so that was, looking through all of that, then I was able to turn around and say, okay, so now I can see when someone tells me no, that perhaps for them it's not healthy for them to say yes. And so I can accept that, not take it personal, that I just got a no, and then I can let it go. So that was kind of a big one for me yesterday, too.
You got to love when those big ones come in.
I know it, even in a laundromat.
Yeah, that's part of just being able to be willing to be ready at any moment, because it's,
yeah,
we really don't get to decide.
Right, for sure. So we've got about 11 minutes. If someone presses one, we've got time for your question, to offer you an answer, to offer you support.
646-200-4169. Let us know how we can support you.
My hand just went up. Area code 541. Is this Miss Julie?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Tim. Hi, Jeannie.
Hello, Julie.
Hi. Dr. Tim, I actually do have a question, and I don't know if you heard anything yesterday, but I want to know, how do I apologize to two people who I now see, from, especially from what you were saying today? I was starting to get this inkling that I was projecting onto them that they were my parents, and I needed to do something to help fix things. And I was taking on feeling guilty and all kinds of stuff. And so how do I actually apologize to them responsibly, without going into a big explanation about how I did some work on myself and found out all this stuff and projected too much onto them, you know, because they don't probably have those brain cells, you know? So how is it, I mean, I guess I'm thinking just trusting love to, and look at Akucha and just trust, and they'll get the sincerity of that without, you know?
My first impulse is to say that, once again, you're way overthinking it.
Yeah.
How do I apologize to somebody? I say, I apologize. I was out of line. I don't really need to say anything else.
Oh, all right.
And you're... I don't want to take
okay.
your breath away. I don't want to take your breath away, but I want to hint at how when you have this very strong pattern of wanting to figure things out, which mm-hmm. you seem to have admitted on the call and certainly mm-hmm. demonstrated many times on these calls, you might be one of those people who has that pattern of wanting to figure it out, who also has the pattern of wanting to control things. I don't know. You'll have to look at that for yourself. But yeah. if you're one of those people who has that, I have to figure it out, I have to figure it out, I have to figure it out, and you also have this pattern of I have to control things, that might be going on here. And there's no way you can control their response to your statement. So simply make a statement. Mm. I don't like the way I felt about how I acted in this interaction, and I just wanted to apologize.
Mm. That's simple. Okay. Yes, you touched on those two behaviors that I demonstrate often, and I now see that the driving unconscious, the one that I can see right now, is that I was always trying to think ahead of what was my mom going to do or what was my dad going to do, you know, and try to please them or keep an argument from happening or keep out of the line of fire. You know, I have that habit of trying, never really figuring it out, but trying to always stay a step ahead. So thank you. I think a big one's starting to come forward for me in a way that I'm actually ready to address. Been there a long time, but I have not wanted to address it. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome, and just allow. It, mm-hmm. it isn't anywhere near as difficult as we tend to make it most of the time.
Yeah.
And you have to keep your breath going. And, of course, you have to do your work. You can't just talk about doing worksheets. I can't just talk about doing mind shifters. I've got to take the pen and put it to the paper. And I have to keep my breath moving and monitor myself when I'm doing that. Because if I don't, I'll miss the cues that are there to let me know that I'm off the mark. And the cues will be there.
Yeah. What about the cues of being on the mark once you get through that?
Well, that's your true nature. That's a calm, easy breath. That's a deep feeling of contentment. That's an allowance and ease. That's,
uh-huh.
you know, that's,
uh-huh.
that's the thing you can't create.
Uh-huh.
That's the path of least resistance. That's direct observation, if you're Krishnamurti, you're talking about it. If you're Abraham, you're talking about the path of least resistance. If you're Way of Mastery, you're talking about desire, intention, allowance, surrender, and humility.
And in the Course in Miracles, the mind that, you know, the egoic mind can't create what has already been created. But it keeps us distracted, thinking we can or we have to. Anyway, that's me. I do that. So thank you for reminding me
to
accept what's already created.
Right. So it's a feeling state.
Mm-hmm.
And that will happen when you remove everything that feels like tension, everything that feels like struggle. This came to me the other day listening to Abraham talk about the vortex, and the vortex is simply the place of love. You're resting in the awareness of your true nature as love, you know, aligning with source energy. And the point is, people decide they want to get to the vortex, and so they're going to, you know, do this work to get to the vortex, and they're going to make it a struggle, and they're going to fight their way through it. And you can't struggle your way into the awareness of your true nature as love. You can't struggle your way into the vortex. The vortex is the absence of struggle. Your true nature as love is the absence of conflict and struggle.
Mm.
It's the awareness that there is no separation, that there is no judgment, that there is no control, that there is no figuring it out. There's only allowing. And everything in me that's less than that, I need to dismantle. I created it, and I'm the only one that can dismantle it.
Okay, thank you so much.
Well, you have our support in doing some work, actually doing some worksheets, actually doing some journaling. Or if you like the tapping and breathing, actually doing round after round of tapping and breathing. How long should I tap? Well, you should tap until the issue's gone or you pass out. And if you passed out before the issue was gone, when you wake up, start tapping and breathing again. Because nothing is more important than releasing everything inside of me that's less than love. Nothing's more important than that loving feeling state and being able to have conscious awareness of it so I can amplify it and radiate it out to the people and situations in my life. Nothing is more important than that.
Dr. Tim, I don't know how to do the tapping.
Well, you can go to YouTube and search for Faster EFT and the name Robert Smith. And when you search YouTube for Faster EFT and Robert Smith, there are hundreds of hours of YouTube videos free. You can watch hour-long dissertations on how it's different from regular EFT and how it might work, and you can watch 10, 15, and 20-minute sessions where he's tapping with somebody. And it's a perfect free tool that has changed a lot of people's lives. So give it a try if you're into that. Otherwise, you can just, you know, do the worksheets,
mm-hmm.
do the mind shifters, do the breath work until it ends up clearing what's less than love in you.
I have a mind shifter for you.
Oh, no. Okay.
I have
you.
A mind shifter for you. Are you ready for one?
I don't have anything to write on yet, but I'll get something. Yes.
You call the show with a question and you don't have something to write on.
I usually do. Thank you. I'm ready.
It's Safe and Healings,
mm-hmm.
and I absolutely love to be in the line of fire.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Are you breathing?
No. But I think that's part of what I haven't been breathing about.
Yes, I got it. That's why I offered the mind shifter.
Wow.
So write that one. Anybody who's not familiar with the mind shifter process, the idea is to use that as a written catalyst to bring up the parts of the mind that are in disagreement. And as you clear out those old dynamics, there you go. And then you find that you can stand in the line of fire and people are firing, you go, oh, okay, you fired. Mm. And if you have no response, if you have nothing in you to respond with, then you'll just go, oh, somebody fired. Oh, well. If you've got something in you, then you'll get a chance to forgive that. And that's always an awesome opportunity. How cool is that? And you know, when you offer the apology, it can also be helpful to just make a commitment, you know. And in the future, here's what I'm going to do.
We're out of time.
No, I apologize. I apologize for being out of line there. And in the future, here's what I'm going to do. And we're out of time, so we're going to say, bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. And Dr. Tim, thank you for your help. I just got to a place where I'm sitting still, so my van's quiet. So.
Thank you.
Be blessed.